Welcome to the Innovation Calling Podcast,
where we connect creators for the next big thing. We're your hosts, Aaron Greger
and Sia Yasotornrat.
Hey, it's Aaron Greger.
And it's Sia Yasotornrat.
And we have another great episode of Innovation Calling for you. But before we do, we have our next Women in Tech Leadership live podcast recording event. And Sia, who do we have coming?
We have Robin Rios. She is the VP of Product Management, Innovation, Emerging Innovation over at Citi.
Yes, going to be another great event. I'll tell you, we're almost at a year of these. Can you believe that?
No.
It's crazy. Yeah, it will be October 9th, Citi Central. Yeah, Sia's thinking about the year thing. We started in February, Sia. It's been almost a year. It's crazy.
It's October. Oh my gosh.
Okay, yes. Well. But anyway, the result, I love seeing people take notes. I love people getting involved. There's networking. You know, I mean, so many of our connections have come just strictly from networking. And this is a really important thing to do just to be, I mean, you've got VPs and C-suites of companies
giving full access to their history, their ups and downs, the humility and humbleness. I'm telling you, it is really inspiring to see these individuals because success doesn't happen in a vacuum. People don't see the failures. And this is a great opportunity to actually see some of the failures and how they overcame it. I love it.
Exactly. So innovationcalling.com, head over, grab your tickets. It's going to be at the home of our studio here over at Citi Central off the North Dallas Tollway. October 9th, hope to see you there. So let's talk about this episode, because this was, this is a big, he's smart. He's definitely at a whole new level that I'm not.
Yeah, well, he's on a whole level that, not. I mean, I love this guy. So may I introduce Mr. Robert Adkins. He is the CEO of Balanced Media Technology. If you ever want to think about the world of gaming and how it's evolved from that 8-bit little game, fun Game Boy, whatever, action awesomeness, to what it is today. You know, for me, Red Dead Redemption is like one of the most fun games for me. But there were plenty of games in the interim that really kind of formed the experience that we look at today. You think of Quake, Duke Nukem, you know, Heavy Metal, Tomb Raider, you know, 007, all these cool games. Well, guess what? Robert was a part of every single one of those games I just mentioned. And for someone that's been in a veteran, that's seen it from basically infancy, I just love the fact that Robert wanted to build a broader story around gaming. Because gaming industry, Aaron, as a parent, do you love it or hate it?
Yeah, I'm torn. I mean, I don't want my kids on video games right now at all. They're 6 and 7, so we're not there yet. But, you know, if they have a chance of making $3 million on Fortnite, I mean, hey, go for it.
Exactly.
Just kidding. I'm not encouraging it at all. I won't encourage it.
But at the same time, yeah. Robert saw the same thing and the problem with that reputation that preceded the world of gaming. So he created Balanced Media to actually incorporate gaming concepts to solve real world problems. So, for example, if there is cancer research and they're actually looking at a way to kill a cell, and that methodology around it, they're actually developing a way that using gaming techniques to see how our brains were actually solved to kill that cell, if you will. And to me, they're taking all that information, all that machine learning, interactive machine learning, and leveraging artificial intelligence capabilities, again, machine learning, immersive learning, and a collaboration, the crowd sourcing of intelligence. I mean, he's pulling all these massive concepts into a simpler platform.
Yeah. No, definitely a lot of work that can come out of this. It's truly cool. So without further ado, let's jump into this episode with
Mr. Robert Adkins. So Mr. Robert Adkins, thank you so much for joining us. We met at the Digital Fight Club, Aaron.
Oh.
And it was after hours when I got to meet you. And it was just one of those things where, have you ever just walked in, saw someone at a bar, and said, I'm going to have a conversation with this random person? And I think that's what I did to Robert, and then he's never gotten away from me since then.
Sia stalks people at bars quite a bit, so consider yourself lucky.
I do, actually. I think we've met and be friends for a long time, because you guys are doing great things, and we had an incredible conversation. It was like, I didn't want it to end. Like, how do we keep this going?
It was really cool. So just so you know, Aaron, this is going to be one of our first members of a salon that we're looking to create. So have you guys ever had conversations with individuals where, wow, you're so fascinating. almost like women conversations in bathrooms. Mm-hmm. We're like, oh my God, we're going to be besties and we're going to talk about life and solve the world problems. That's pretty much what we did.
Yeah.
But,
Robert
made
some
progress too.
This is where we're going to roll into balanced media and your background. He's actually putting money where his mouth is to solve the world's problems. So help me understand, Robert, you are a gamer programmer back in the day and you have come a long ways. So let's talk about the world of gaming before we kind of move on a little bit and go into balanced media. Where did you come from and why did you go into gaming of all things as a programmer?
Yeah, so my background is actually I was going to art school. So I'm more of a creative director. I've touched programming, but I've been very instrumental in a lot of different games. And when I look back, I go, holy cow, how did that even happen? So it's kind of like one of those weird things. You never know. I always, when I teach at the Guild Hall, I tell the students to look around. The people sitting right here in the room with you, one day you're going to be, you know, you're going to work together in a company and doing great things. And I met my best friend at LSU, and he was going to art school as well. His name is Adrian Carmack. And he and John Carmack, John Romero, Tom Hall created a little company called id Software. And they started in my hometown. And so my best friend started making video games well before I ever did. And I had no interest in it. I was like, you know, I'm going to paint trees and I'm going to teach. That was my goal. I was going to go fishing. And it ended up that when I came over to visit Adrian here at Mesquite, and Dallas has a huge history in the gaming mm-hmm. industry. They were working on a game called Doom, and they had already put out Wolfenstein. I played all those games. And like I said, nothing really ever talked to me enough to where I'm going to go do that. And I went and watched, you know, I was coming over here to watch a Bon Jovi concert of all things. And it was just an excuse to come see my friend who I haven't seen in a year. And when I walked in their office, it was like going down the rabbit hole, man. These guys were having way too much fun. There was a door leaning up off the hinges that someone had chopped a hole in it with a battle axe. And if you read the Masters of Doom book, you'll hear about all these things. Well, I was right there looking at it like, oh my God, is this chaos, you know?
Yeah, so wait, let me clarify. You walked into their studio and there was a chopped up door. Were they actually videoing someone chopping up a door to get the animation cut? Like, I don't understand.
No, something happened. I think John Romero's office, the lock malfunctioned. So their resolution is, you got a battle axe in there. Why not chop your way out of the door? So that's what he would chop his way out of a door. And those guys were having so much fun. And there was a music guy, Bobby Prince, and he come around the corner and says, hey, you guys want to see something cool? Who doesn't want to see something cool? So we go in this little office, like a closet. It's their sound studio. It's like this super small closet. And he's standing there and he brings up, the first time I'd ever seen anything with Doom, he brings up the Cyber Demon and he has sound effects added to it. And it was like, it's like a dummy. I'm like, this is the Renaissance. This is the Renaissance. Like I kept saying that over and over and over, because it was like at that moment, Doom, which ultimately became the pivotal game for, you know, what we know as esports now, mm-hmm. what we know as multiplayer, what we know as the visual fidelity, suddenly was a launching pad. So I just like, I'm in. I'm gonna leave. I left school my last semester and moved in on Adrian's like waterbed and was like, you know, I'll find a job. We didn't have the internet, so I was just sitting on applications. 6 months later, I was the art director at Apogee, which is the in 3D realms. So yeah. I got to work on the really great stuff like Rise of the Triad and Duke Nukem 3D. And my career just kind of started because my best friend was in it and was like, it never looked back.
Of all industries to just flop into, and don't mm-hmm. take it personally, I say flop into, but of all industries, I mean, goodness, what good fortune for you. I mean, gaming is so huge. It surpassed Hollywood, right? From a revenue standpoint.
Yeah.
And it's only growing.
Yeah, it's about $137 billion a year. When I started the industry, it was like $1 billion a year in revenue. There were 100 million people playing video games. I don't want to go too far in my history, but I'll wrap.
Yeah, we have never done a background on gaming in general and the whole industry. And so for us, just even hear about the roots, the grassroots, where it's come from, to me, you're there, right? You saw it. And that's just, to me, amazing, because it's so integral in our society today. It wasn't back when we were growing up, right? Like the 80s arcades, that was still considered, you know, the arcade was the place to go to, right? Yeah. Where the the whole golf huff and puff and stuff and all that stuff, right? The video games were just another augmentation to the golf world, if you will. Now it's like opposite, right? It's like, the video games are the primary. And by the way, get your butt up and get outside and golf a little bit, get some blood flowing.
Yeah, totally. And there are games that are doing that, right? Getting us moving and stuff. And I guess, you know, at the time I came into the industry, there were 100 million people playing video games worldwide. Now they're over 2.4 billion with a B. Yeah. And so the industry just continues to grow about 17 to 20% annually. And now when you look at the demographics, it's almost equal male to female.
Yeah.
And so games are for everyone. And they're not just the stereotypical teenage boy in a basement.
I almost argue that, yes, that is what you would consider the stereotype. But the reality is my boyfriend's in his mid-40s. I see more 40-year-olds playing video games and owning the Twitch and all that stuff. You know, I mean, and then the younger kids are actually watching them play. It's what the vibe I get oftentimes. And it's fascinating. People make money off of it. I mean, who thought you would make money someone watching you play a video game?
Yeah, it's crazy. And that's the thing is, like, once you're a gamer, when you're born with the game, the generations that are being born with the gaming systems in their homes from their parents, they typically are going to be gamers for life. It's not something that you put down, and you will pick up games when they come out, especially the hits, and you'll continue to play throughout your life. And now games are actually being introduced to an older generation who were not born with them, as a way that they can keep their minds fresh. And so there's this benefit that we see, no matter what level you're at throughout your life cycle, there's a benefit for interactive entertainment when it comes to the brain and it comes to even your physical abilities. So gaming is not just a one facet entertainment aspect. It has so many levels of value, and I think we're just figuring it out.
I love to watch my boyfriend play video games. I myself don't enjoy the hand-eye coordination of it because I don't know how to do the controls. X, Y, up, down, and then these R left, R right. I'm like, oh my gosh, stop. When it moved away from just a standard joystick, I think I kind of tapped out. But the visual impact, how sophisticated the imagery is today, you know, it's not an 8-bit game anymore where you're used to looking at squares. I mean, this is like deep fake now, like you see kind of getting into games, right? Is that a good thing?
I think it's a fantastic thing. And I think what you're seeing is better storytelling, better visuals, better engagement, because we as designers in gaming, we know there's a crowd there watching, and we want it to be a community pastime and not just a single experience that you're isolated with from others. So like games like Drake's Fortune, you know, Amy Henning is one of the best writers, and she could go write for Hollywood all day long. She writes these incredibly beautiful stories, and the fact they're interactive makes them even better because the player becomes part of that story. They're part of the action. And then so they're in it, literally in the game themselves, digitally experiencing something you could never get from a passive TV show or movie.
I want to get into balance because...
Not yet.
What else do you want to ask?
I have one question because I'm totally obsessed and Aaron knows it. So you talk about the storyline and the interactivity, and I think Hollywood is now taking cues of, if we're not going to be a little bit more relevant to what's going on and what entertainment is, they're going to be by the wayside. Where I'm going to give props to HBO. Westworld, to me, was like that first sense of, wait, they're taking video game mentality of a premise of it. You know, when you think of like, Red Dead Redemption, for example, and then they kind of twisted it, if you will, in an entertainment medium that Westworld is. Now, granted, they've now veered off to do whatever they do, but that initial premise, I almost feel like when we play Red Dead Redemption, I can't even say it, Red Dead Redemption.
It's a tough one. Say it three times.
I know, right? Now I almost feel guilty of having my character do certain things in that game, because now in the back of my mind, I'm like, oh my God, this AI, what if it becomes like, you know, conscious, right? So anyway, that was my two cents.
Yeah. And, you know, I've seen, because I came in so early, I've been very fortunate to have been through all the major transitions and technology advancements. So multiplayer, when the internet came along, you know, when we played, in 96, we shipped Duke Nukem 3D. It's now a Gearbox IP. And then we got to go work it with id on Quake. And Quake was the first genuine 3D game. In order to play multiplayer, you had to drop down the tilde. It's like DOS back. It was like you type in a, you had to type in a command to get all the IP addresses. Then you had to like go search an IP address and you had to type the IP address in. I was like, oh my God, I just want to play multiplayer. You know, like, give me like, make it like two buttons and I'm in.
You know?
Like, I don't want to think about that. Even as a developer, that's super frustrating. And so all those types of things, those moments, like we started talking about, how do we get access? How do we get people completely engaged? And it doesn't matter how old they are, or how young they are. It's like they can just hit a couple buttons and they're in. And I think that's, to me, is probably one of the more compelling things, is how do we grow this market? And how do we grow it to where, you know, people aren't shaking their heads going, what are you doing? You know, like even now when we talk to people, investment community and things like that, if you lead with games, they still shake their head at you and they still don't take you. They still don't take you
seriously.
Serious.
Right. Yeah.
And Adrian, it was funny when I first moved here, Adrian said, and he's working on Doom. He's like, never tell anyone you make games. They won't take you seriously. And that's like so crazy to me that they're almost 6 billion people playing games and people are still shaking their head when you talk about where this platform can go and they don't take you seriously. Well, I think it's because they were at that age where they decided to go be an accountant or they decided to go to college and do something that wasn't allowing them access to the media, and they never really caught on. And they're looking at their kids now when their kids are playing games and they're like, well, I spend thousands of dollars on my kids playing these games, but they don't take the time to play with them or watch them like you and your husband do, and they're missing out because this is the biggest thing out there.
Yeah, I mean, that 14-year-old made, what, $2 million on that last game or $3 million, whatever. Either way, it was millions.
Fortnite, yeah.
Yeah, or the Fortnite tournament. Yeah. And, like, could you imagine all those parents back in the day of, like, Robert, get off your game and go study. And next thing you know is, Robert, congratulations and thanks for making that $2 million. We can go to Disneyland now.
I was gonna
say,
can you make the house payment next month?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Well, why don't you just go ahead and pay the mortgage?
Yeah,
off?
Exactly.
Thank you, son. But go ahead, Aaron.
No, I was just going to ask. So I'll be honest with you. I read about balance because I know you're in the gaming industry, but there's a lot of keywords. There's a lot of description, a lot of information. Can you talk about, after working in this gaming industry for so long, the need that you saw and how balance fulfills that?
Absolutely. So having worked on a lot of stuff, like I was kind of at that point in my career, I'm like, I don't want to just make entertainment anymore. Mm-hmm. And I want to do something meaningful. And I honestly didn't know what that was. I thought maybe I'll make games that teach kids ethics. You know, like we don't teach them in school. So where can we get it? Right.
Yeah.
Let's put in video games. Maybe that'll help. And so I had this idea and I had all this deck with me, and I went to go shop it to a friend to get some feedback. His name is Brandon Oldenburg. He owns Flight School here in Dallas now. He started Real Effects. He won an Academy Award for his work over at Moonbot Studios. And this other guy, it was a friend of his, hijacked the meeting, and Brandon invited him. And he was there to pitch me an idea. And the idea was, what if we could go in the body and shoot and kill things that are trying to kill us and heal the body from the inside? And this guy, Carl Laperouse, who's now my business partner, had been thinking about this for 20 years because he was a professional athlete. He was, he was a writer. He really was really struggling with, how do we teach kids that they need to eat healthy or they need to start thinking about their body? And so it was like, how do you do it? And he didn't have the answer either, but until he watched his nephew constantly play games. And he always said, he had two kids, I'll never let my kids play video games. And so his daughter and son were like 9 and 11. And he said, I'm going to test this. I'm going to put them in front of video games. And in 3 months, I'm going to give them a test and see what they've learned. Within 3 months, they knew all the characters, they knew all the missions, they knew the backstory. I mean, talking about Halo and like some of the bigger games out there. Turned off the violence, but it was, and so he's like, oh my God, this needs to be a video game. So he came and pitched me the idea. And I was like, you know what? Going into the body and learning, that sounds awesome. We know games can educate.
Cool.
We know games can educate, right? And so we started doing all this research. We started talking to people who were doing games for change, games for good. It was super boring. No one was doing it right. You know, it's like, no one's going to like play it if it sucks. I mean, that's just the bottom line. And so I was like, we know we can make something super compelling, but I kept coming back to this thing with Carl. I said, man, I don't want to just make edutainment. You know, I want to make something that I can measure and quantify that actually is doing good. And we didn't have the answer to that. So like a lot of entrepreneurs, they give up or they don't keep pushing, you know? And so we just kept pushing that. So, and that's when our other partner came into our lives, Dr. Corey Clark. He had been building a platform, which we call Human now, H-E-W-M-E-N, and that connects games to machine learning and AI. And so you can basically connect actual cancer research right into a game, just as an example, cancer research right into the game. So literally when a kid is at St. Jude playing the 8-cell, our game, the 8-cell, you go in the body and he's killing cancer. His actions in the game are actually training AI and machine learning models to help the researchers who are trying to find treatments to cancer. So gaming, in this case, he literally is helping and he's fighting cancer, literally.
How do his actions, though, help fight cancer? I'm trying to, by him going in and shooting off certain things, how does that help find a cure?
So what we did as part of our technology that we developed, algorithms have certain, mm-hmm. call it a loop, certain, with gameplay has a certain loop. What we did was we matched the gameplay loop to the algorithm loop. And at any point during the algorithm, we can put in data sets or we can have humans look through the data or look in a new way to visualize it. So imagine, and we put it in Minecraft as well. So in Minecraft, you have red and green blocks. Mm-hmm. Well, in gameplay, if it's just gameplay, that block has a variable connected to it. It's red, it's green, it makes a certain sound, it breaks a certain way, and the player can push it or pull it or move it or whatever. Well, we're saying let's add another variable to those blocks or to those gameplay items, and that is the data from cancer research or from another. So now you're actually, when you engage and you're matching blocks or you're combining things, you literally help visualize data differently just in a gameplay. And it's completely abstracted from the player. And they don't have to know that mm-hmm. they're doing it. But we ultimately want them to know because we want them to feel good about it.
Interesting.
I think it's such a, I think it's just that next generation thinking. Mm-hmm. Taking gaming, if you will, to the next level. Taking research to the next level. Leveraging all the hashtag that we love to talk about. And you should see us do this, by the way, Robert. It's just what we do.
Hashtag
AI.
Yeah, we like to get the keywords on this podcast.
Yeah, we're all about the SEO there. Think about this, though, too, is a lot of discoveries have been as a result of serendipity or just different thought processes, different way of thinking. So if you can imagine a student who is crime fighting against a cancer cell, but introducing a different way of approaching to attack that particular cell, maybe at, you know, maybe, I don't know. It's been a long time since I've done biology, but, you know, instead of the mitochondria, why don't we go after, you know, a different portion of the cell, right? That might have some effect on cell generation, et cetera. I mean, I can see where maybe a researcher could say, oh, I didn't see that before. Why don't I look at it?
Yeah. So I'll give you a really great example that predates what we're doing, but it's kind of like how citizen science has been successful in the past. Berkeley created Boink, which was a distributed grid computing, and they allow people to start building things on it and distribute out problems to the community. Well, at a University of Washington was doing HIV research, and they were about to run out of money. And so because they couldn't, using a supercomputer alone, they couldn't figure out how to fold this protein. And they, by folding the protein and knowing how it looks in 3D, then they can start to affix compounds and whatnot to start to try to experiment around the HIV research. Well, what they did was they paid a college game team, to create a game called Fold It at Home. And it was a way, all the game was folding a 3D protein. And they put it out to gamers. Within 3 weeks, 53,000 gamers had figured out the solution for folding that protein that had escaped a supercomputer for 10 years. And so it's tapping into the human cognitive thinking in a different way. So like humans can see patterns that computers can't, you know, and like the best example I have is like if you went out into the night sky and you were there with a kid or even your spouse or whatever and say, hey, where's the Big Dipper? You could point up and see the Big Dipper. Even if you didn't know that much about stars, you can just see that it's the shape of a Big Dipper. And if you try to program AI to do that, it would totally be a completely different problem. It would supercomputer eventually get there, but it would take this understanding of the idea that it's the shape of something and the pattern of it that's actually what it's trying to find, and not a name or not a location. There's no location called Big Dipper. It's just, and that's what we're doing. We're using human intuition on certain aspects of that algorithm to gameplay loop that matter. And then we compare it to the supercomputer. So we're not abandoning, we're not saying that we're replacing traditional methodologies. We're saying that the humans are now in the loop. And human in the loop is, we see it all the time in other industries, but we're going to build a platform that allows any games for this to be possible. And so we can start to inject data sets, imagery, problems that are now connected to gameplay. And so other industries outside of gaming can start to funnel their problems into the gaming industry. And you start to see for the first time where gamers can tackle problems that are super meaningful. And they're already doing it. They're sitting there in front of their computer, spending 1 billion hours a week online, solving problems all day long. In most cases, using that experience to escape reality, mm-hmm. by having this technology embedded into that experience, the gamers will actually be creating a better reality.
So how much do you have to compete with? Like, obviously you need people playing the games to get data, right? Like you were mentioning, they've got to be compelling games, all of that. And I don't know enough about the industry, so pardon this question, but how much like are you having to compete with a Fortnite, for example, these popular games? Because a lot of times they're playing it because their friends are playing it, et cetera.
Yeah.
What makes them play your games versus these other games, and how do you get more people on board?
That's a great question. So when we started looking and researching into what's the solution, that was one of the questions was, how do we make something compelling, mm-hmm. that people want to play, and how do we get developers who make traditional games, the mega hits, to want to do this too, because they need to make money, yeah. right? So that was the whole thing was, while our gaming industry makes, you know, $137 billion on software sales, there's a lot more money outside of other industries that are sitting on these massive amounts of data. So if there's a pipeline for those other industries into the gaming industry, it's a new way to generate revenue. Mm-hmm. So let's put that on the slide for a second. So to your question is, the goal was, we don't need to make all these games. Mm-hmm. We just need to have the tool set that is already integrated into the gaming yeah. platforms and the engines that are being used. Fortnite is being built on top of the Unreal Engine. The Unreal Engine is one of the most popular engines in the world that a lot of gamers and game developers use. So our tools work in Fortnite. I'm sorry, work in Unreal.
Okay.
Could work in Fortnite as well, yeah. but just haven't got there yet. We also have someday. Our tools in, yeah, someday. No, absolutely. And this, I know a lot of those guys. And our tools also work in Unity. Our tools work in HTML5. Our tools are now starting to work on top of Twitch, so that while you simply watch games, you don't even have to be downloading a game, or you don't have to go buy a game. The crowd that's there to watch the streamer, to watch the game, could also be doing this too, right there in the Twitch extension. We're making those pipelines. That's where we're starting. We're starting with those pipelines. We're not trying to develop one single game. We're trying to develop the pipelines that allow this technique to work with any game. And so we want to give those tools to developers for free. We'll just make them available. And how they make money and how we would make money off the platform is when, say, a pharmaceutical company or a company that has large data sets wants to engage with a crowd. It's called crowdsourcing AI. They'll pay for that access, and suddenly there's a new revenue stream for developers, for content creators, to be able to solve problems while their players are engaged. So it's a whole nother revenue stream that exists that doesn't currently exist.
So what's the objection? Like, what would, if you said, hey, I've got this great platform, I want to put in your game, or, you know, sit on top, what makes me say, I need to think about this, or I'm not quite sure?
Yeah, I guess that's a great question. So I would say people are always going to, how does it affect my experience?
Yeah.
It's going to be the first question usually. And then, is it secure? Is always another one. And we're not doing any, like, all the technology that we've built has been built off of pre-existing technology that has been proven to be safe and secure when it comes to that. We're not collecting data. Mm-hmm. Like, we're actually helping process data and helping visualize data differently. So unlike a lot of the big tech companies that have a really bad reputation these days, we're not like data mining. We're actually doing it a completely different thing. We're actually, and ultimately what we want is we want our community, the people who engage this, to be able to choose which problems that they want to contribute to. Because it's problem agnostic, that's the platform is, that same minute of gameplay could be doing five different problems simultaneously. So I mentioned Minecraft. Wow. I mentioned Minecraft before. We had cancer research going through that same minute of gameplay. At the same time, we were doing a pilot with Raytheon that had to do with blockchain and trying to hunt down money laundering. So the same exact minute of gameplay, you could do completely polar opposite things.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I am so like blown away and lost. Okay. So What you're introducing is a total complete shift paradigm. I know I'm using all those words, but it is the way one would apply to get information data. How do you compile it? How does one, let's say at Raytheon, say, oh, hey, your platform I think can help me in this particular use case? That's got to take a creative brain to think outside the norm. I guess I'm struggling to find how are you guys positioning? Are business coming to you?
Yeah, because somebody's got to be connecting some dots, and I don't know.
Just what you outlined right there, sure. I'm sitting back right now thinking, man alive, I think the world just passed me by. Like, I didn't see that way. So I guess, How are you guys approaching this? Or who are they coming to you? Are you going to them? These use cases are different. I guess
right.
I'm trying to wrap my head around that.
And so how those opportunities came to us was through the university. SMU, Corey, I was an adjunct lecturer at SMU. Corey's a professor, deputy director of research. He was hired specifically to start to innovate for other industries and using gaming techniques to drive that innovation. So people came to him because they heard about this platform and they heard what he was doing, and they wanted to, they had their use case and they wanted to apply it through our platform. So they are very different. It wasn't like we went out and searched them, but we wanted to show that it could work. And I think you've hit the nail on the head, is like when you create a platform that can do a lot of different things, one, people don't always believe you. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, it's either the greatest thing I've ever heard or unbelievable. And well, it works. Our pilots work. But the thing now is like, who wants to, like, finding the right customers, finding the right partners who see the power of this and want to start putting their faith in the platform is really where we're at as a business. But the thing that's different between our technology and most technologies is we have a community that you're connecting to. So if there's customers or there are partners out there that see the power of connecting to the community that they ultimately service, that's where the real value is at the end of the day, because you become, you know, endearing to your customers and you connect with them in new ways. And the gaming industry, and especially communities like on Twitch, they're very, very skeptical about most companies outside of the gaming because they're an outsider trying to get in, right?
Yeah.
And that's why having people like myself and our team who've made games forever, we're like, no, man, this is the way we level up our industry. This is the way we take our industry and do amazing things that, guess what, can have massive impact in the world that right. we all care about and we all share. So it's a new way for the community to be empowered. And I think that that's really what it's going to take, is it's going to take partners who see that and say, these guys can use the crowd power and do something amazing. I want my company to be part of that because I'm sitting on all this data. I'm sitting on all this information. I need help getting through it. And this is the new.
I mean, this is such a forward way of thinking, but I'm so excited. Every time I talk to him, I know he probably thinks I'm going to be like a monkey jumping up and down because I just get super excited. And I am trying my darndest right now not to like scream and yell because Aaron says I have a volume control issue. But that being said, absolutely.
She yells a lot.
Well, look, I'm kind of
surprised I haven't cussed. I'm happy for me. You work on your volume control.
We're doing some LinkedIn Lives today and I'm like kind of deaf on one side. But anyway, keep going.
But it is, you're hitting the right generation for this. I think you've got the right time. Yeah. I think you've got the right message. I think you've got the right technology to help you get the beginning steps. And as it continues to evolve, I think you've got the great mindset. I mean, Aaron, we talk about this. We had our last roundtable, which, by the way, we're due for another one, about generations. And we're Gen Xers. And we were just talking about how we've weathered so much technology change, right? We saw the internet come about. We, you know, much of us were obviously predated, but how we embraced it and evolved it until what we're seeing today. And as I spoke to you yesterday about the Gen Zs are digital native. That's all they know. That's all they understand. The millennials, I thought, have contributed to this conversation by the whole crowdsourcing concept, that there is altruistic good in business mission, that you can do business, but there's something good that you can take it to the next level to improve upon. So I think you doing the crowdsourcing, the fact that you're using gaming, which is already, I know you don't want to say it's entertainment, but you're using something that can give us that good feeling mm-hmm. for a better benefit. And that's why when I told Aaron about you, I was like, you know, clapping my hands. I'm like, girl, yeah. We've got to talk to Robert because you get it.
Yeah, it's now is the perfect opportunity because all the things have aligned and the culture is there. And when you study younger people who grew up with games, the thing that, you know, is if you look at what drives them, their purchase decisions, their employment decisions, there's a big piece of them that are like, hey, we want to be connected to brands and to opportunities that make this place not suck as much. And you know, and so that's really, you know, and when I looked at this, we talked a lot early on, we're going to empower massive communities to make impact. And that's how we're looking at it. And why now it took us 2 years to prove out our pilots. We had to get the study back because we're doing medical AI related stuff. So we had to like, it can't be a white page. It has to be IEEE third party peer reviewed. It has to be working with actual researchers. So it took a while to get to the point now where we can say, let's start onboarding customers because we didn't have the proof. And when we go out and we're talking to foundations and groups, we're like, this is what we're building. No, the vision has never changed. It's always been just, we had to go through the grind of getting all the pieces in place. And that's really been the process that we had to go through. And we know that now, and when you're so far ahead of the curve, like it finally, you start to see things catching up. You know, even the former, you know, Google CEO said the next $100 billion company is a crowdsourcing AI company. There's all these idea that crowdsourcing and AI are really where it's at. And we do it all the time. We just don't realize it. My personal favorite example is Pandora, and my wife laughs at me because I don't use Spotify, but Pandora, I spent a lot of time thumbsing up and thumbsing down my songs, and now when it delivers me a new song that I've never heard, it's spot on, and I love it, you know, and we've all been had to prove that we're not a robot, right? We all have to touch the stop signs, and it's like super not engaging, but it's for a purpose, and it's doing something for another industry, and they're making money off of it. That's the type of stuff you can start to integrating into games and gaming. While you're playing games, you're actually benefiting other industries. It doesn't just have to be medical. We just happen to be starting with that as our entry industry. You start to see all these engagement hours having now a whole new monetization vertical and another meaningful thing that's taking place while people are just playing. I mean, what better scenario is that?
I just in my head, I mean, I'm not a Sims player person, but the fact that smart cities and all things IoT and all connected everything, autonomous anything, I can absolutely see how your platform would feed right into it. There's so many government agencies right now, they're putting out RFPs talking about, you know, looking for consultants for the next gen smart city deployment, blah, blah, blah. It's like, to me, what your platform offers is an augmentation. I'm not saying it's a replacement, obviously, but yeah. I could just see where cities... they can see the different paths each of your crowdsourced data can provide. If you want to be that kind of city where everything is automated, where you've got a barrier and only autonomous vehicles run your core, and then everything else can be, you know, human, or it could be, how do I look, a combination of both. I am so excited right now. I can't even begin to tell you. It's again, Aaron.
Aaron's skeptical.
No, I have more questions to ask, yeah. So I'm waiting for Sia to finish.
No, I'm just...
but Like,
he's the future.
Yeah. No, I agree. Well, I want to go into when you were developing it, and you said it took you 2 years. So what were some of the gotchas, maybe things you weren't expecting? And I already asked objections, but what kind of came that took it a while for you guys? Maybe you weren't prepared for, maybe you didn't think through to get it to actually getting customer perspective.
Yeah, I think in general, the one thing that we've struggled with is communicating this complex idea down to language that anybody can get, no matter what level of understanding of any of the pieces. Because we're connecting dots that don't typically connect, I think that's challenging for people.
Yeah.
But if you look at complex problem solving, it takes a multidisciplinary approach. So by connecting games to biology, to data science, to programming, that's actually makes a lot of sense if you think it takes.
It does, yeah.
But we don't need any of those people to be subject matter experts. That's what a platform allows us to do. So it's like communication's been challenging. The other thing was we made a point at the beginning. We said, we're going to stay away from traditional money that would understand gaming. Because typically a publisher, especially at the time we started, publishers want to own everything. And so we said, let's not go there. Let's try to grind it out, get enough of this built out, enough of this proved that we would actually retain ownership of our company. So we started raising private capital. So trying to find people, and when you're pre-rev outside of the gaming industry, you're like, okay, who do you have these conversations with? Because everyone wants to know what's your revenue, and they want to base your valuation off of that. We're like, well, we're not revenue generating yet, and that's because we had so much technology to build that we weren't trying to race to that first dollar. We were trying to stand up all these pieces, enough of them, so that they could prove out the platform. And so now we're at a place where we're starting to talk to the right partners who are in the esports world that are like, we're doing stuff on Twitch, for example. We did an event with Children's Hospital where we had Michael Irvin, the Football Hall of Famer, come in and play with the kids that had gone through the Children's Hospital. And we put a Twitch extension game. At the time, it was like kind of in beta. It's not, it's a lot more polished now, called Omega Cluster. And that was the first time a game on Twitch, meaning you don't have to download anything, you could just tune in and play a little game right there, was doing cancer research. And
it's so cool.
And so it's like, we had this process of standing things up, you know, and that's been grindy and all, but it's just part of the journey. And for us, it's like, we were so far ahead of the curve. It just, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. You're definitely ahead. That's interesting.
Is that you've been an entrepreneur several times over. Is that one of the biggest challenges I think entrepreneurs face, is the fact that if you're that forward thinking, it's hard to, quite frankly, get it off the ground as far as to prove the solution?
Well, I mean, I'm always curious. It's always interesting. It's like, how do you find that balance? And where you guys have found, like, where you're not before your time, right? Like, how do you find that sweet spot where you're forward thinking, but not too forward where you're ahead of your time?
That you're
you
not
think of pets.com, right?
Exactly.
It's like, well, they were too far ahead of their time. So has that been a challenge because of the forward thinking too?
Well, you know, all the pieces have been there.
Mm-hmm.
Like I mentioned, Folded at Home, that was citizen science. It existed. It wasn't scalable, didn't monetize. It only solved one problem. There was Pamela Oldemir, whose husband founded eBay. She had a group called Hope Lab, and they had a game called Remission where you could go on the bottom. They did all these white pages. It was amazing work. 2007.
Wow.
Not developed by professional gamers, and they didn't finish their work. They stopped. And I feel like we picked up, when our game, The Eight Cell, I feel like we picked up that torch. Mm-hmm. And because we want it to be any game, we look at the industry as like the whole industry should be doing this, not just a single studio. We had to start putting our technology into these game engines. And that took a long time as well. But it's not one of those things where I feel like we're inventing any one thing. So like the Apple thing, we're just kind of like seeing what's there and we're like connecting dots, you know, we're connecting the pieces. We're not necessarily, if you look at any one thing, it's not magic. It's just, we took 2 years even before we incorporated to look at the problem And we said, okay, what is the thing? You know, what is the thing that we're doing? So that's the thing that I had to get used to, because I'm used to putting out my, selfishly, I like to ship stuff, you know, like,
yeah,
and I'm used to shipping products, a lot of products. And I've worked on over 50 titles and I've helped co-design probably about 30 of those. That's been the challenge, is like, how do we weather the grindiness of getting all this stood up and telling our story and getting it out there where we're going and being able to keep our sanity at the same time, because, you know, it sucks when you, people look at you cross-eyed, or they don't, they roll their heads back, or they tell you like, well, I'm not going to invest in you. You know, all these things, or you get all these different things that every entrepreneur goes through, and it's like, man, they're missing out. We walk out of meetings, they're like, that's their loss. You know, they're going to be sad when they see this thing, you know, take off. And that's, and you know, that's okay. That's just part of our journey. And I had to personally kind of like realize, you know, I had to like take stock in where I'm at in my career. It's like, I'm not going to ever stop what we're doing. This is the only thing I care about, like work wise.
That's
like,
awesome.
This is it. I mean, this is like, I will never go back to making games, just games. I will never do anything besides this. This is it or nothing, you know? And so that's the mentality of all of our people. It's like, this is all I want to work on. Everybody that comes on board is like, we can't afford to pay them market rate. We can't afford to do a lot of things as a small startup. They're like, dude, we're in this because we want to be part of the future. And that's really where we're going. So we have a lot of the right people and the right mindset. And we're just very blessed that we can actually work on something that can impact lives the way we are going to do and the way we have been able to so far.
So I know I could keep talking to you forever, Robert, but if you're in front of a student right now that's entering, let's talk about the Gen Zs, if you will. I'm really into generations right now, but this is the next generation. Again, digital native individuals, they're looking for a career or a path.
Yeah.
What's your recommendation as they enter university, or if they don't enter university? So what's your advice for those next generation 18-year-olds that are looking to find purpose? Or
I'm, as a creator, I'm always pushing people to be creators. Like, I think you can create your own destiny, your own path, your own company, even when you're working for someone else. You know, like, I think that that's the thing, is like, you it took me 10 years working professionally before I ever got to design a game. You know, so it's like, you know, because I was working in college doing art at a hospital. I was visualizing doctors' data back then. It was just with graphs and charts and medical illustrations. And then I worked 3 years in marketing, you know, designing the box covers for the games before I ever got to actually make a design decision that go into the game. So it takes time. That's, you know, so people give up way too quickly, you know, and they want to, like, you know, and they don't realize that it takes 10, you know, to become a master of something is like 10,000 hours, right? And so you have to be willing to put in the effort. And the other thing that I would say, and I learned this while I worked at 3D Realms, was if you just do what you're asked to do, that's part of your job requirement. Like, if the boss just says, hey, do these tasks, if you just do those, that's 50% of the opportunity that you have. You should be doing 50% of your energy should be going to things like improving pipelines, learning, studying your industry, creating new ways to do things, innovating offline. And I think that that's the biggest thing that I learned as a young professional was, don't wait for someone to ask you to do something. Yeah. You know, you should be doing it. And it's so funny already. And you should be doing it get paid, you know, take a job, get paid. But in your off time, in your free time, in your spare time, whatever it is, you should be adding value to your skill sets that will grow you and get you to where you ultimately want to be professionally. Because just earning a living is, you know, that's like, that's cool. And I got no problem with people. I know people who just, you know, clock it in and clock it out, and they're happy. This is not how I'm wired.
Right.
And so I think that there's a level of growth and feeling of success that comes from only the other 50%. You know, and I call it the 50-50 rule. I don't know if there's probably a book written on it out there, but I just learned it on my own.
You got one coming.
Yeah.
I mean, Robert, I love you. That right there to me was like a total like masterclass of a, like right there. I think I just, you kind of gave me chills a little bit, because I wish I had someone tell me something like that 20 years ago. Because you do forget about that intentionality in our 20s. We were so eager in our 20s to make an impact in our world.
Yeah.
But we get jaded over the course of our career. So, Robert, for those that want to get to know you more or want to get a hold of you, how would you recommend they reach out to you?
Yeah. So I've always shared my email address openly, you know, and you can, of course, find me in social media. I'm an open book. I'm one of those guys who only will publicize things publicly. I've gotten more mature, I guess. So if it's not worth the world's attention, then I'm not gonna share it. So robert@bmt.world is my email address. And you can follow us at, you know, balancedmediatechnology.com or bmt.world as well. We'll get you there. And so I'd love people to tune in and start watching. We got a lot of cool things coming up that are going to be connecting some of those dots, and hopefully our messaging gets clearer as we know what we're doing and refine it. And I think people will start to see gaming as the genuine, most effective platform ever created. You know, maybe next to the internet. Yeah. It's like the internet's pretty awesome. So
yeah, I guess. I mean,
the gaming's right there, man. We're like a second. We're like a close second.
I think it's the next. It's a natural progression. To be honest with you, I mean, the fact that, you know, my 45-year-old boyfriend plays video games, that should tell you that our culture and society is ready to embrace gaming in a different capacity outside of just pure entertainment.
And my 7-year-old son goes over to your house to play with him for video games too. So
I'm very proud of my boyfriend.
Very cross promotional. Awesome. Yeah.
So I think on that note, Robert, so much. Thank you. Yes, it was a pleasure to meet you. And I love this conversation. If I may, I'd love to have you come back and join us for a different type of conversation as we go along. But I think, Aaron, I think that wraps it up for another round of Innovation Calling. Thank you.